go to thecognitiverampage.com. Feel free to contribute, donate, keep fueling the change, whatever it is that you guys can do to help continue to allow this to happen. None of this would happen without you and your love and your support and, of course, your contributions. Love you.
The Cognitive Rampage, a scientific approach to self-discovery, change, and life optimization, is now available on Amazon. What I do in the book is I fuse the latest research from the cognitive, behavioral, social, environmental, and biological sciences. It's not just motivational fluff and wordplay. Now, I do talk about my own story, so there's some kind of inspiration in there, but I'm not just spinning words and hyping you up with motivational fluff. Whether you need a life change, simply enjoy self-exploration and optimization, want to discover new hidden passions, or reduce the life-altering effects of toil, anxiety, depression, all of those issues, this book is for you. This book is not a cookie-cutter method of steps to follow. You'll customize the scientific framework with your own personal beliefs to build your authentic change. That way you assimilate it faster and quicker. It's not just copying my beliefs and telling you step one, step two. These will come from your beliefs as how you extend and build the foundation upon this framework. You'll use this framework throughout your whole life, through every change, and through every age. These are not empty words of motivational spin. This book is an experience. The Cognitive Rampage is based in science and is built from your beliefs. It's a path to help you unleash your desired change. You can apply this method on your own with no harmful side effects.
Welcome to Cognitive Rampage Podcast. Hope you're taking care of you. I know you're living your Cognitive Rampage. The new year's coming, right? It's when everybody gets their shit together. Whatever the fuck that means. I'm not quite sure what that means, but get your shit together. It's kind of vague, really. But it's the new year, right? It's when everybody's buying the self-help books, getting the new diets. They're going to change their ways. Here it comes. I got the next 4 days to eat stuffing and mashed potatoes and not give a shit and get drunk. And then come new year, I'm going to make it for a couple weeks. And this is usually what happens, right? This is the majority. A lot of people go through that, right? Life kicks back in around March. Shit happens. The job's still calling. We forget about our health and we figure, well, you got to do what you got to do, right? But we forget that our bodies, our minds, those are the things we're actually working for. And perhaps maybe just the beginning of the new year is when we should not just focus on taking care of ourselves, really, right? And that's kind of what the Rampage is about discovering all of those possibilities, all the ideas, all the approaches, all the thoughts, all the experiences, wisdom, and competence that we can possibly find out there from so many people that you can apply to your life to optimize it, to make it better, to live your authentic Cognitive Rampage. And the gentleman that's coming on the podcast today was nominated by many a Tribe of Change member. If you want to join the Tribe of Change, just go on Facebook. It's a closed private group that we have there. One of the administrators or moderators will deem that whether we entry. It's not like some secret 007 shit. We just try to keep it calm in there. So there is a filter. But in the Tribe of Change, the gentleman who's coming on the show now is going to, well, teach us something. I want to learn some more things we can apply to our lives that you can apply to your lives. I appreciate you coming on the show. Sol Han, welcome, man.
Hey, what's going on, Adam? And I appreciate you having me. And I guess we'll teach each other, right?
Well, right. I think we all can learn from each other when we're willing to listen, right? When we're willing to say, you know what, let me just listen for a minute. Because even if what I'm hearing isn't real applicable science or something, it works for somebody, right? No matter what that may be. And even if it is or isn't, it may not work for you. But I think you said it right, brother. If we listen, we can learn from each other.
No, absolutely.
Well, for you, you have done a lot of learning. I obviously see all the functional patterns, certificates, and levels behind you. So representing functional patterns for sure. A group called Spirit Tech, I believe, is what it was. But before I do it, I'll make it cheesy, man. Walk me into who Sol Han is, man. I don't want to start out, right, with the labels, right?
Oh, man.
You know what I mean? Walk me in.
You know how it gets when you start talking about yourself. But basically, man, I don't come from, you know, what do you call it? Your average background of life in general. I grew up a little bit different. You know, not to say we all, you know, we've all got our issues, but, you know, I did grow up with a little bit of turbulence, let's say. So, you know, that led me into other things, and those experiences obviously lead you into other things. So I ended up in functional patterns. Now, basically, I used to do Olympic style Taekwondo. So I competed for a very long time up until about like 19 or 20.
Well, I hope, let's not skip by all that. It ain't what just, I like the turbulence definition. And trust me, Sol, we both know, I think, the importance of how we tell our story, right? Whether we tell it with the drama, the sad story it is. And I see what you're doing, and I think that's powerful that you skip over, call it turbulence, and move to the beautiful stuff. But for some people, they're not quite there yet. You know what I mean? They're still living that narrative of trauma and turbulence, right?
Okay.
And for perspective, man, could you walk over what the turbulence was?
Yeah, I mean, you know, just being first generation here, you know, I'm Korean, so obviously, but I'm in America, so I'm first generation, born here. You know, so growing up, and I also grew up in a Christian family, right? So growing up, I was always questioning things, let's just say, and I always had I've always had different experiences, you know, as far as like lucid dreaming, getting into other things, you know, when I was young. So that made me really question my upbringing. You know, when I go to Korea, I'm not really Korean because I'm American. When I'm in America, you know, I'm not really American. Why? Because I'm Asian, Korean, whatever, Chinese, whatever you want to call it. So yeah, man, it kind of brought me into a very rebellious nature, I guess, let's say. You know, and then, you know, the whole story of parents splitting up, you know, my mom left around like 14. So, and I don't come from a very wealthy family. So obviously, you know, just trying to make it out there. Well, you know, whether it's just the simple things from food to clothes, you know, and my parents tried their best. So, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, at this point, I think we're all mature enough to not blame our issues on other people or, you know, but my parents tried their best to keep me in there. So anyways, you know, I had to figure out how to make it. And, you know, by doing that, man, you know, you learn a lot. You put yourself in very compromising situations. And like I said, man, not to put too much out there as far as what's going on, you know, in my dealings or whatnot. But, you know, I did have to struggle a little bit to get myself to where I'm at now. I am an entrepreneur. I learned a lot about business and not so much in your, what do you call it, regular tenets of business. You know, I had to deal with business on the other end, and that teaches a lot as far as character, moralistics, trust, loyalty, and so on.
Well, when you say the other end, well, all right, we're skipping vagues here now. I think a lot of people in the beginning can really grasp on to the idea of it, but not really the true experience of what it's like to be a minority walking into a foreign land, to a foreign place, and also then not being able to return home either to where you come from. I have an old friend who's coming on the podcast this evening. I have three podcasts today, by the way. And we have a friend's coming over, Marwan Ramsey, and he was from Brooklyn, black guy, and then moved to Ocoee, where, buddy, let me tell you what, when it's Ocoee, it's Ocoee, right? And he's going to come talk about his experience as being immersed in that as an athlete. And so it's a similar story. So I think people can maybe grasp it, but I don't think they really get it till they live it, what that effect is really like, and then also losing where you can go home to as well.
Right. And it, I think, man, I moved out at 17. So, you know, at that point, it's pretty much, you know, back against the wall, right? And it's basically, what decision are you going to make at that point? And I've obviously failed at a lot of things. I bumped my head plenty of times. Like I said, I've you know, whether, you know, going to jail for this, picking up these charges for that.
So that's what you meant. So similar to what I wrote about, man, is you kind of went down a criminal activity way to try to sustain yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah, let's put it that way. So yeah. I mean, and, you know, I think by doing that, it's a very, not many people go down that path. Mm-hmm. And I think it just brings out a different mindset, you know, just trying to make something out of nothing.
Well, you mentioned loyalty in that, man. And I mean, I know when I was in that game in any fashion, Loyalty is few and far between. It really teaches you there isn't much loyalty out there. Absolutely. And then when you come from a childhood where you can't much trust anybody as well there at the home or at the house, people are splitting up and going different ways because at 14, you don't know any different for the most part if they left. Really, that's all we know. So right. you're brought to a foreign land. You lose your own homeland. Everyone starts to leave the house. You're said, man, then I get in a game to try to support myself. That's not an easy game. I love when they talk about it, how it's like, oh, you chose to sell drugs. That's the easy way out. You don't. Yeah, right. Right. You try sleeping at night. And yeah. So it's a different ball game, man. But then to go that way also and enter so early into a childhood of still brain development at 2021, just like I did, and not be in a place where you can trust anybody. And your life is on the line. It is up for grabs at just about any moment by anybody else's decision or choice. And at 20 or 21, man, that's just like entering the Marines and going to the front lines a lot of times.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And, you know, I think that that's what makes, you know, people in these situations who they are is because you do face times where it's, you know, pretty much whether it's a gun to your head or, you know, other things is, you know, is your life flashes before your eyes, let's just say. But yeah, man, growing up in that background, it led me, and I actually did, you know what, let me put it this way. I actually did pretty well. You know, I got myself out of it. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
I did really well. I got myself out of it. You know, I had good mentorship and things like that. And I ended up being really successful really young. So I'm 27 now. And I was, you know, back then it was, you know, probably around like 22, 23, you know, I started seeing some light. Let's just put it that, you know, and doing so, man, I realized how shitty of a lifestyle I was living. You know, at that age, having a good bit of money, you know, there's good things to it, but there's also the other end of it, you know, there's other end of duality, positives, negatives, right? And usually when you make it there, you have to kind of face the mirror because there's really no one else to blame left, or no one else left to blame, basically. And, you know, you got to take responsibility for everything that goes on around you.
Yeah, there's that crossover soul, right? I often ponder it. When does the transition become the personal responsibility of the individual and not the individual's past?
Say that one more time.
You know, when is that line, right? What's the age or the line? When is the moment to where the individual begins to live for their lives and not defined by their past or influenced because of the past, right? It's right. I often ponder, you know, where that line is or how it gets drawn in people's lives.
Well, I think I don't think it's more age. I think
right,
it's
right. I'm just giving the basic structure yeah. where people would think. Right, it's 18, they can vote. 21, they can drink. Right. This is stupid, right?
I mean, right. I think we've been trained to think that way. You know, at a certain time, you grow up. But you know, I know plenty of 40, 50-year-olds out here with the mindset of a 13-year-old. So
right, right, yeah. So kind of from that point, right? So walk backwards from there as people understand that easy access of measurability. But to say, you know, what is the line, right? What made you or made me, right? A lot of people also want to say it was some catalytic event, even. And a lot of times for me, it was over time. It wasn't necessarily some catalytic event.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's more of a accumulation of experiences. I think for me, I got this reality wasn't fun anymore. Let's just put it that way.
That's a good one.
I saw both ends of the reality. I saw the good, the bad, and everything in between. And it got to a point where I basically had to make a decision. Hey, you know, you either got to check out of this shit or keep pushing through. And I've definitely been at that point, you know, right at that thread. And, you know, I decided to keep going. So everything's grand now.
Yeah, man. Well, I think you mentioned, I think so many people are there in their lives and don't talk about that time, man. I mean, where you say, okay, this is the point where I either say, I'm going to be okay with either being dead or in prison. And I'm going to be okay with hurting other people and just let my spirit go. I was talking to my girlfriend's son last night. You know, about that moment as we lose our spirit, if you will. Now, it's some yogi sounding shit. I get it. But I've seen enough dark shit to just talk like that. And it feels yeah. like so you could follow. But the more we begin to do worse things and worse, we cover up that spirit, that energy that we are, and we almost become that. And the younger you begin to do that, the younger you believe you are that.
Absolutely. And I think, too, man, that's part of my life where, I got into heavy deep into occult knowledge and spirituality at a certain point in my life. And I think what you just said, basically, I think there's a difference between there is a difference between your soul and your spirit. I think at this point, a lot of people have given their spirit They've allowed other programs, let's say, to kind of enter and take control over that reign. But your soul, you know, your soul deep down, like what's behind your eyes, you know, nothing or no one can really take that from you. But your spirit, your will, things like that, I think does get taken to a certain degree. And, you know, I think personally in my life and, you know, in other people's lives, a lot of people are fighting to get their spirit back, if that makes sense.
Yeah, look, a lot of people objectively argue with us about our language use, right? But it's something that's, I don't know, bro, when you see the dark side of shit, it's sometimes you can speak straight to that and be like, look, if there's some dark shit like I've seen, there's got to be some good shit that I haven't seen, too, that just is equally crazy. You know what I mean?
No, absolutely, man. I think what the reason about the whole objective subject thing is you got to understand what language even is. So, like, basically, there is a subjective plane. Right. And that kind of, and I actually saw your video that you posted about subjective and objectivity.
Yeah.
That was dope, man.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
It's inspired, man. That's inspired. That's just pondering, hearing other people talk, man, and go, shit, interesting.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think people have to realize the English language itself doesn't have the capacity to describe what subjectivity really is. I think that's one of the main issues and main barriers for a lot of people. So even for me, you know, I prefer more objectivity because that's actually what creates active change in life. But also, I think, you know, for you to say that the intuition, you know, these other parts that drive these objective changes, you know, that's a subjective thing to talk about. Do we avoid these things to talk about? I don't think we should. I think we should, the more clear understanding you have of the subjective side of yourself, you know, I think it has to work together. Like I said, it's, you know, for you to even be born in this world, there's a positive and a negative charge, right? So that's, we're in a world of duality. You know, you were born bipolar, basically. it took your dad, you know, the male, the positive, and the female, the negative. And I don't mean this in a good or bad tense, you know, right, wrong, none of that. You know, it took a positive and a negative for you to even be born. And I think that's what causes a lot of the, what do you call it? The unknown to stay unknown within a lot of people. You know, it's a very unsure thing for most. So most people will stay out of it because it's the unknown. But you know me, I like to jump into the fire.
Yeah, man. I mean, look, we can't prove is or isn't in certain levels, right? And maybe we could change language around to say that subjective is just an objective miscalculation. And we could discover eventually what that objective idea is, but we can use physics and even question that finding of what it is. And without that philosophical questioning of the finding, we can't go further into the objective without using the subjective hypothesis of wonder and philosophy.
Yeah. And I think that subjective side of things actually guides you. For me, I've dove in plenty of times into what you would call the subjective plane, you know, gone beyond what you would say the veil or whatnot. Experienced death on many different levels. I think we die pretty much every, you know, when you wake up, there's an old part of you that dies, there's a new part of you that begins. If you choose to take that path. And then, you know, in doing so, you kind of get rid of the fear of death. You know, for me, death doesn't exist. So basically, what is death? Death is considered the end, you know, for me. So if there is no end, there is no beginning for me, man. I just keep existing. I just keep living. I keep pushing through. So.
Well, man, we can walk down these vibes, man. You know, I was explaining last night to her son the differences and walking through the difference of multiverse and perfect symmetry and vibrations. And, you know, it all started sparking with, I have this odd theory about what deja vu really is. And it gets pretty intense, but, you know, that we pick up on frequencies that have existed before, that there's no original idea, that we repeat it in some sort of pattern. And when we relive a deja vu, it's either another's life or our other life, or our brain just picked up on some sound or some waves, if you will, of thought. If you could imagine, the thoughts that we have are either a wave or some kind of thing that move faster than we can even possibly imagine that they move. And we are obsessed with some idea of wanting to go faster for some reason, but yet we try to go faster. faster and faster. But what if we're really just trying to catch our own thoughts to where it's a wave that we can't see with our eyes or any kind of technology yet, but for some innate reason, we want to go faster. And so we're trying to go as fast, faster than light and move as fast as our thoughts do. So then we can actually move through time by moving through others' thoughts that are radiating all through that our brain is just, well, not that tuned in yet to pick up all the thoughts.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I think even if you look at the power of a thought, if you look at everything around you, and I tell people this too, man, from the clothes you wear to whatever job you're at to whatever car you drive to your family, you know, that you've created or whatnot, everything started with a thought. It has to have started with a thought for that to exist within your environment, within your life. So the power of, you know, one thought is, you know, pretty immense when you think about it in those terms. And yeah, man, if, you know, I think we want to, I think right now people want to move fast just because of the rate that technology is moving. I think we have to see, you know, where that's at socially. And, you know, just with technology speeding up things and, you know, computer, what do you call it? Artificial intelligence, things like that going quantum, basically. Yeah. People want things instantly. You know, we have our phones, we have social media, we have all these things that instant dopamine, right? We like to call it. Pretty much get on there and get your dopamine fix, you know, within a matter of seconds.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, we're feeding it now. I mean, I think our conversation last night started by talking about aliens, right? About aliens existing. And I said, man, what if we're just the chimps, really? We're the beginning to the chimps, and the alien manifestation is really what we are trying to become, right? Which is all knowing, connected through somehow technology into ourselves, able to move at speeds and through time, and genderless. And when you look at the aliens, you go, shit, it feels like we're walking that way, that it's not about aliens existing, right? That it's just us manifesting our future selves and ideas of imagination. And we are simply the chimps in the beginning of this role of, well, whatever's to come from it.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And like you said, all knowing, man, that's a term that I strongly go with, that basically, you know, we're all knowing beings already. I think we just forgot. If you look,
what? Dude, I say that shit. Who said that? Did somebody say that? I may have picked it up somewhere. I used to say that all humans are all knowing all the time. We just have to be reminded.
Oh, man, you know, I got all knowing from one of my good mentors and brother, Sivan Bomar. He's actually the creator of Spirit Tech and Secret Energy.
Cool.
But, you know, he's kind of been doing this for a long time, just cracking what we would call the code to the Matrix. He has a book out called Code to the Matrix. So yeah, man, it's, you know,
where can people get that at?
You can actually look it up online, man. You can look it up.
Is on Amazon or something like that?
No, it's free. He gave it out for free.
What?
Yeah. Amazing brother. It's called Code to the Matrix. And he gets deep into some heavy occult knowledge there, symbolism, things like that, that, you know, kind of go beyond.
Kind of Carl Jungish.
What was that?
Kind of Carl Jungish.
Yeah, similar, but you know, he's got his own flavor to it.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Carl Jung's old, man. But, I mean, I dig him. Don't get it twisted. I love him. But yeah, pick that up, y'all, man. Check that out. I'll get one. I'm going to download. Can I just download it or I order it?
You can just download it.
Beautiful.
Yes, sir. But yeah, I mean, I forgot what we were talking about right for a second. Now,
it happens, man. That's what we do on this show is all paths are open to walk down. But you were talking about, you know, opening and recognizing a life that's in front of you and choosing a way by beginning with your thought to shape it in a way that you choose to manifest it in.
Yeah. You know, I think a lot of people look for an external savior. I think people look for something outside of themselves to actually start creating what, you know, how to actually create things within their lives or get themselves to another point. I think if you ask anyone who's had any kind of success in anything, you know, they've realized that, hey, man, at a certain point, they had to take responsibility for everything to get them to where they're at, whether it's the good, the bad, whether it's directly, you know, whether it's directly to them, indirect to them, you know, you have to take responsibility for everything within your life. And I think a lot of people lose that because they lose the fact that, you know, that power that you have is behind your own eyes. It's not in anyone else's hands. It's not in an external God. There is, you know, there is plenty of stories out there. And I'm not saying these stories are completely false. I'm not negating these stories. But just know that, you know, the story doesn't come from nothing. There's another story behind that, and another story behind that, and another story behind that. And I think you have to be able to dig deeper. You have to do your research. You have to go in and kind of see what's really going on. And like I said, you know, even like the books like Code to the Matrix, you can really start to see where these constructs, start to come from? Where do these stories come from? Well, you know, why do so many people believe in these religious programs? Why do people subscribe to these things? There is a reason, you know, and it's out there, whether, you know, there is some subjectiveness to it, but there's also very, very a large part of it is objective. It's you just doing your research. We're in the age of information, man. There's Google. You can Google shit.
Well, so, that means they got to wake up though, right? And when you start walking down people's beliefs, right, these things that are concreted in their minds, when you start doing that, what you're doing is saying, hey, all your top secret information you've been living by for so long is actually false. So you'd be okay with that and research it. Most go, nope. I'm just going to have to continue. And look, we can't prove religion, I think, has distorted the true idea of God, if you ask me. Religion killed the idea of God. And I don't, I mean, I'm just me. I can't prove any of this. I don't believe God is the chess player up there manipulating our lives and moving us around. I mean, the prodigal son, even if you want to use scripture, is a good story to kind of tell you that. That is, he's not meddling in that you choose to go out into the world and end up with the pigs or stay home, right? I mean, you find correlations here. So it's not about an idea of proving that, but I think religion has distorted what an idea of an existence is and something greater than our knowing of what we could know or even possibly understand. Stand with our human brain.
Right. And I think you know, religion itself, man, it's a story, man. It's
some beautiful stories. I mean, some timeless stories, even, where you can go, shit, you know, it's applicable, and you can link that to certain ways of control and telling histories in certain ways. And, you know, it's, you know, I guess like life, right? It's left to the interpretation of the perceiver at that moment, right?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think with religion, it's just I would say it's more of a copy. It's more of a plagiarized version of the real thing. If you look deep into the religion, you know, even the story of Jesus or story of all these other things, whether you're Islamic, you know, that every story you can basically break down to the same construct, right?
Yeah, I mean, Horus matches Jesus' story, which is, you know, many years
before. You go deep into the Cretans, you go deep into the Anunnaki and all that good stuff. And that's where research comes in. You know, I'm not going to go too far into that because that's probably a whole nother podcast itself.
I was hitting the brakes on that one.
So, you know, at a certain point you have to, it's basically like this, man. If you, let's say you just fucking found out a bunch of shit, right? And, you know, they opened the book and they said, hey, man, all this shit. And it basically debunked your whole belief system. Everything you grew up that you thought to be true. Would you go back to your old lifestyle?
Yeah, most wouldn't even begin to read that because it would be blasphemy to even begin to read it or touch it.
Absolutely, right? Why? Because it's the unknown. It's very uncomfortable to them. I actually put a post on this yesterday. Basically, you know, people, when they go into something unknown, right, which is change, that's all unknown is. You start to, you know, you start making changes. It's foreign to them. So what happens with people is they go back to the last place they felt comfortable, right? And
even if it's trauma, even if it's a war zone, they will recreate that shit.
Absolutely. So they go back to what's comfortable without realizing that comfort is actually what's killing them, right? It's actually what's causing the damage. It's actually what's leading them down to this rabbit hole that they can't get out of.
But our skills match there, right? Like, for instance, if we take your life, right, yours and my life, to survive whatever, either it's an abusive childhood or a crazy drug lifestyle, right? If it's surviving that, we develop tools. Hell, if one of us went to Iraq, we develop tools at 19, 20, even 18, they go, right? Or if I've been, you know, abandoned when I was 9 or adopted, whatever, I develop tools to survive that. And if those tools serve me in the most traumatic time of my belief in life, well, when I get older, I apply those same tools. If those tools don't work, well, all of you suck, not me. And then I must recreate my environment to match my tools. That way I know it's not me, that it's them. Even if that environment is chaotic, dramatic, traumatic, it does not matter. We'll recreate it because it fucking works there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's just basically using your same experience that got you to a certain point, and then you just use it and apply it in a different manner, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, when we look, the spirit talk, right, when we go there is always edgy for people, right? Some are deep into it and they're like, yeah, right, and like they know it, and some just turn it off immediately, right? There's so much information out there about what that means and divisions and separations, and it's a hard thing to really explain without either getting cast into the oogie boogie yogi or cast into the religious fanatic, right? It's hard not to go there, and sometimes it becomes so convoluted that a lot of people just go, fuck it, I'm out. You know what I mean? They don't do anything. It's just like, I'm not even going to research that or look this. I don't do church anymore. I was raised, you know, and a lot of people, they just put their hands up and say, I'm out.
Yeah. Man, I think that's the easy thing to do. You know, for me is I've had experiences that I can't, you know, you just can't deny. Let me put it that way. You know what I mean? And when you get to those experiences, it you know, you really have to go in further, you know.
That's that shit you can't show, right? When you're like, yeah, I know it sounds this way, but you, never mind.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's all in this language. What is language? What is your idea of language, Adam?
Let's see. Yeah, probably a way I could describe it is probably the same way I sort of walk into what dreams mean in my theoretical approach, right? Is sometimes when I've smoked enough green, I like to say that, well, I have an idea that perhaps our subconscious, which I know has been a word used many years ago, which we still have no true definition of, less research than we did back then. It's just still an idea. But I say perhaps the subconscious is somehow trying to communicate with the conscience, except it doesn't speak English. It doesn't have that lame way of trying to communicate because it's so archaic. So all it tries to do is gather the things you've seen and put pictures together to try to give you a message, to try to go, are you fucking picking this up? And hoping that your conscious comes to be with something in your subconscious, right? So that's how I would talk about what language is, an archaic way of gathering data from our experiences and what we've seen in social constructs and influences from our behaviors, experiences, our parents and everything else, and doing the best we can to try to somehow jumble together all the pictures we see to communicate something.
Right. So basically, you know, no matter what language it is, it's some form of communication, right? Some form to get your ideas. And I think the language you're talking about is another form of language, but the English language itself, like I said, it's a program. It's letters and symbols, and you put the letters and symbols in a certain order to create a certain spelling, right? So with that said, the English language itself is a pretty new language. It's not like an ancient language.
Right.
So it has its limits, man. So for you to try to even use the English language to explain some of these experiences doesn't really make sense, you know. Yeah. You know, we can
try. You sound like a crazy person. You sound like a crazy person that doesn't quite understand all the levels of it. I mean, there's certain words that don't exist for certain things and certain descriptives. I mean, hell, one word is spelled the same way, sounds different ways. Use it. It's if it was code that I had to put in a computer, it would be fucking terrible. Would be fucking up all the time.
But it's still a coding. And that's what people have to realize. So people get stuck in this language that we call English, and it basically keeps them stuck within their consciousness to be like, hey, man, like, you know, they're trying to make sense of everything in life and trying to, what do you call it, put some definition to the idea of life with the English language, which is actually a subpar language. It can't do that. You know, your life can't be described or explained through English. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Even if you read scripture, I was cool in humanities class, my favorite professor of all time. Sorry if there's more out there that have been on the show, but Dr. George Brooks has been on the show. Brilliant man. Anyway, back then he made us do a paper, basically pull from scripture, find a sentence or two and write what it means. And I don't remember verbatim, but it was something about a golden eagle flying, etc. And basically I was writing that, look, this is the lamest way that we have to describe something amazing. Cause at the time you'd be thinking this golden thing that flew through the air that did this amazing stuff. You would be describing it like that because that's all you had when you couldn't say it. You just come up, and man, it was like a golden eagle, man, just flying, you know? And it's like, that's what they're really saying. And that's where we're in that same boat, especially when we talk to ourselves.
Absolutely. And I think that's, like I said, with it, is start to get familiarize yourself with the deeper language. You know, there is a language that's And I think now here in this reality, it's the objective language or more through action. You know, well, what are you actually doing? What are you actually, what kind of change are you actually implementing? You know, and how is that beneficial for yourself, not only yourself, but for those around you? You know, I think that's the language that actually gets shit done, basically. Right.
And I think that's our conscious world. The world that we live in is applicable to that world. You know, that's a lot of times when I say there is no truth in our conscious and physical world, but I leave it open to the spiritual subconscious world that I can't speak about.
Yeah. You know, and for me, that's actually what guides me. You know, that's what I would like to call, you know, and my brother Salon, your higher self. You know, you have that's that voice in your head. That's that intuition that basically, you know, guides you into the right places at the right times.
Yeah. A lot of people, I think don't listen. I think I pulled it out of the book cause it wasn't scientific. I think I did the first edition. It was in there. I used to joke how, yeah, that's right. The first one, I had it all split up with mind, body and spirit and stuff. And then I had to move away from that in the second version, but I definitely did. And, anyway, I used to say that, you know, a lot of times the spirit, that self inside, that one that knows, it speaks once softly first and never again. It tells you, don't do that. And then it sits in the corner. Then the other ones are like, come on.
That's what I call the monkey mind, man.
Yeah, then that one starts getting you. In the corner, though, that first voice is like, I already told you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, exactly. I'm not, I already told you. You already know. I already told
exactly.
you.
Exactly. And that's the chatterbox. You know, and when you do, I think that's what happens is they're both tools. It can serve you or it can, you know, it can harm you.
Right now, so people are listening going, these guys are out of their fucking mind. They're talking about the spiritual thing, talking to them, and the voice that you hear. You know, I'm telling you, I'm going to get emails now, so, you know.
Oh, man, it's all good, man. You know, people do you.
No, I don't give a fuck, man. Yeah, this is how I talk, man. It's how I think. So I don't give a shit. I'm transparent on this motherfucker.
Right, right. You know, so pretty much with the monkey mind, you know, that's the chatterbox that's always like, hey, man, you know, you need to do this, you need to do that, nah, 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 nah. But what you don't realize is that chatterbox actually needs something to do. If you logically give that chatterbox something to do, right? If you're in your fucking all depressed, you're like, oh man, you know, you're here and you're going down this whole loop in your mind, thinking about the same shit over and over again. That just means you need to give that mind something to do. You need to get your ass up, fucking clean the kitchen, you know, organize the shit around you, start seeing, you know, clean some clutter and, that voice actually can be productive. If you start putting that mind into, you know, getting shit done, maybe you'll be in a better place. Maybe you can actually get yourself into a position that you're not sitting there and thinking about, you know, your own demise, basically. Right. Yeah.
I like that, man. I mean, I talk a lot about automatic thoughts. It used to fucking trip me out as a therapist in a facility. I had to write down for a negative symptom, automatic thoughts. I used to be like, what the I'm having them all fucking day sitting right here. Like, should I be institutionalized? You know, we have automatic thoughts. What they are, we don't have to judge those. You know, it's like you said, how we categorize them, what we do with them, and where we implement them in our lives. You know,
And I think a big part too is seeing what actually causes that thought. You know, what causes that chatterbox to start going? Okay, I think if you look at your external reality, you know, there's a lot of distractions, whether it's from media, you know, fucking movies. And all kinds of other shit, right? You have eyes, you've got a nose, you've got a mouth, you've got ears. And actually what goes into these, you know, portals is very important. If you sit here and watch the same fucking, you know, horror movie over and over again, what do you expect? You know, if you keep sitting here watching the same depressing thing and listening to the same depressive songs, what do you expect to happen? Right? So if you're not guarding what, you know, what's going here, if you're not escaping your environment, right? Not, you know, even from, you know, I think functional patterns that we're always talking about blue light, get away from the blue light. All that shit is called environmental escaping. Escape your environment so you don't have these distractions. You don't have these things that are creating these thoughts. Cause that's what it is, man. How many of these thoughts are even truly yours? You know,
most of them are not. Most of them, the thought that becomes ours is like that second or third one that we paste together from all the other four ones that we just had and then go, yep, that's fact. That's what we believe right there.
Exactly. And then you stick to it. But, you know, I think you have to realize that, you know, those thoughts are actually the effect of something else. You're actually in reaction at that point. And, you know, I think that's the difference between, you know, being proactive and being reactive. That's why I say, you know, when you start having these thoughts, you know, get up and clean, get up and do something proactive. You know, that's gonna actually benefit you in this reality.
I love that connection, man. It's very simply when you say that, because I enjoy it. Sometimes I detail the car, or I do something very, I mean, I'm a clean person anyway, so I technically, I'm cleaning a lot. So I'm putting together, but I put that, like, I like how you say it, the idea of putting the monkey mind to work. Because when it does that, it allows, and almost like meditation, my other mind to kind of go, all right, now let me process this or do that. And like you said, it can be very productive, man. My house is fucking clean, right? Yeah. Like it can be productive. And through that cleaning out process, you allow the rest of your mind almost a freedom.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and that part of the mind wants to be free, right? And it even comes down to the left side of your brain, right side of the brain, whatever, you know, whatever you want to say about that. And, you know, and each purpose within it, right? So basically, you know, while one side of the brain goes to sleep at night, right? And the other side of the brain is always active. It never sleeps. That's why when you sleep, you start going into your dream world. That's one side of the brain that doesn't sleep. And during the day, you actually want to keep that side of the brain wants to keep going. But it's the other side that's like, no. I want to, you know, I need to make sense of this. I need to make sense of that, blah, blah, blah. You know, well, why are you doing this? What are you doing there? And you know, I think you have to realize that they both have to work together for you to really, you know, concretely start getting somewhere in this reality and, you know, any other reality, if you're into that, you have to realize that there has to be a balance between both. You can't sit here and predominantly stay on one side and expect for you to be fulfilled or stay on the other side, and, you know, stay fulfilled.
Well, I think a huge point, like, look, we talk about it in cliches, right? The kids watching violent movies, all these kind of stuff, right? We kind of brush over it about it being influential, because trust me, you see the kid with the iPad at dinner no matter where you go.
Right.
And what you brought up is important, and I want to kind of slow down, almost microscope it a bit, is we are a reactive species. We tend to be a reactive species, and it's our survival. It's how we almost gather data. It's how we learned early. Show shit, that happens. This burns. That's hot. This bites you. This don't eat that. That makes you sick. Okay. We learn from, oh shit, really, yeah. You know, and if we know we do that. And also, as we already talked about, our language too is reactive in nature and is really an archaic way not to be trusted really in its forming. But if we walk through that, then it's so imperative, really, when you talk about what enters the eyes and what goes even through the nose and the mouth, the ears, being a reactive person. And I love the idea of scaping. I think that's a beautiful term. I mean, look, trust me, right? When you and I walked in that one place delivering that one thing, we were already escaping what was happening, what was around before we walked through the door. Absolutely. Right? So that's an easy application, you know, so escaping that, but being actually aware, but to think that we're not influenced and knowing we're reactive in language, knowing we're reactive in behavior, knowing we're reactive in thought and even in belief confirmation, but yet we'll allow our eyes to just access anything, to be exposed to anything continuously without even question, just due to a norm.
Yeah, man. And I think it's even more deeply rooted. You know, I think once you start seeing what's kind of controlling this society, right, in general, if you actually, you know, it's all written out. But even like Hollywood itself, right? We allow ourselves to watch these movies, this news. You know, Hollywood itself is, you know, Hollywood came about from Aleister Crowley. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but, you know, he's in the occult world known as a sorcerer or a black magician. And he is actually, you know, the main reason Hollywood even exists. You can research this, you can do all this, right? if you see that alone, that lets you know that there's a different agenda behind what we would call Hollywood. There's a whole other agenda behind media. If you turn on the news, you don't see news about, you know, fucking people helping each other. You see news about war. You see news about, you know, bullshit basically.
And we're programmed to watch that. I mean, because we learn from fear, because we're response to fear, we want to see what happens so we know. It's why that joke is always made when something starts happening, people start walking toward it. What is going on here? Right? We have to walk toward it and look at it. And they play the fear mongering. They play the things. We want to watch it and see it more than we want to see the helping thing. We like to see it and it's green, but we are naturally drawn just in our evolutionary, our biology and development. We're drawn to watch that and look at it. And they have certainly learned that.
Yeah, yeah. But if you, like I said, even with movies or whatever, when you turn on something, when you turn on a show, you turn on a movie, what do people do? They go on and they try to see which character relates to their life the most.
Right. Yeah. I'm that guy, right? Oh, yeah. I think I was the red one. I was the red. Yeah.
So now you go out and you start seeing these characters, because that's all it is. Anyone, your personality, all these things, if you don't realize that you're just playing a character and a role in this reality, then you're going to take yourself way too seriously.
See, there it is, doggy. I love it. But that's also where the power is, right? That we realize we are just playing the character. That means we can shape that character how we need it to be, to shape our story and our lives, right? I love that, man. I love to not take your ass too serious.
Exactly, man. And, you know, I think Naughty actually, if you look at him in social media or whatever and see how he portrays himself in that sense, but if you really meet the guy, man, he's a cool ass dude. And he does a lot of good for, you know, people within their bodies, things like that. I like to relate to him just because I see it. It's like whatever character you portray, you know, if you don't realize that you're just playing this character, what happens? You start believing that character. And when you start believing that character starts taking the control, right? That character's like, hey, man, you know, you start believing you are that character.
There's science behind that, brother. There's science behind that development, for sure.
Exactly. And like I said, all this, you know, you can kind of research this too.
Dude, look at Jim Carrey. Like that new thing on Netflix, I gave it a shot, the Jim Carrey, Jim and Andy, when he played Andy Kaufman.
Right.
Worth a fucking watch, man. Either he's playing a really good role again, which is highly likely, right, in the thing, but he's pretty open about how he lost himself. And it made so much sense. So, I mean, spoiler alert, if you haven't watched it, right, it's a small point. But the idea of going, it just felt better because when I was Andy, I didn't have to think about Jim's problems. Mm-hmm. And I just left, you know, mm-hmm. And it does take us over. Right. When I was the dope boy, I knew how to play the role. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And you become that shit, and then you behave that shit, then you think, then you believe that shit, and it reinforces it. And you go, well, that's just who I am.
Exactly. You know? And I think you see it, you know, you see that a lot with actors, because why they have to play so many different fucking characters that they forget like who they really are. They get caught up in one character into the next character into the next character. You know, and forget, you know, who you really are to the core, right?
And that's why I always say, rich people, they play up here. They play in the mind. They've already traveled everywhere. They bought everything. They did everything the construct told them they're supposed to do. And they're going, holy shit, what do I do now? And then up here, they start to get fucking weird. They do some freaky, crazy, weird shit. And then they get busted doing something like, what the fuck are, you know what I mean? People go, what? They have everything. And I'm like, right, but they don't. So they keep pushing for the struggle up here and they end up getting to some mental trippy places, man.
Yeah, for sure. And what do they end up looking for?
Oh, that excitement.
They end up looking for this. They end up looking for what's, you know, what's what real value is, what real, right? But they're expect what the public expects from them is different. Right? They expect them to be the same character. They expect them to, you know, play out the same role. And, you know, I think that's the whole paradox in this thing.
God, then you get lost. Who do they really love? They really love the characters I play, not who I am, right? And then you're lost into, well, will people ever know who I really am or love me for who I am? I mean, but yet it's sold to us as, don't you want to be famous?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think who you really are, man, I think that comes from, you know, for me, I always question the big questions, like, when I was young, I remember, you know, basically, you know, I grew up in a Christian family. So I remember being in whatever Sunday school, whatnot. And, you know, I'm like, hey, man, you know, if Jesus was Jewish, why the hell are we Christian? Right. And then you get in trouble for that. And they don't ever give you an answer. And you're like, well, why did I get in trouble? You know, I'm asking a question. And so, you know, basically in that similar, you know, context, it's like, if You know what? Let me put it this way. If I say pretty much that, hey, who I am is described by, I don't know, if somebody else puts a definition to who I am, right? If they say, hey, man, you know what? I lost my context, Adam.
It's a defining of oneself, man. It's if I allow someone's definition of who I am or supposed to be define who I am, well, then I do lose self for sure. So, but one cannot really discover self until one is first aware that the self present perhaps is not self, even though you believe it to be so.
Well, it's a term called all is self. So pretty much that, like, I know, like, everything I am is a everything outside of me is a reflection of myself. And it's not saying that, like, hey, we're, you know, we're all one, you know, all that namaste shit is beyond that. It's more, hey, man, everything that I do or everything within my own life and everything I see around outside of me is a reflection of that. So if I judge or, you know, what does true compassion mean to you?
Oh, true compassion. See, I prefer empathy more toward the idea of compassion for somebody, because sometimes compassion comes from a higher up level. Like, I'll feel for you, and sometimes it can't. It depends on how it's used.
Right. So compassion just simply means no judgment.
I like compassion is without judgment. I'll take that.
Exactly. So not in a good or bad tense. It just means no judgment, man.
Just without judgment.
Right. So in adept, someone who, you know, who's mature in their thinking, They're not judging everything as good or bad. You know, they realize that, hey, man, I've been there before. I've been in your shoes. You know, I've experienced the same thing, maybe in a different situation, right? Yeah. So I'm not going to judge you based upon that. And that's what keeps things clear. Because basically, for every action, there's a reaction. So for every judgment, there has to be something coming back.
Oh, see, I like that, and the issue of the everything we see is a reflection of ourself. So if we choose then to filter what we're seeing, we're filtering that through our own perception, which is really just a lighting of our own self, a revealing of, to say, this is your filter that's processing the reflection, not the thing that you're actually seeing is that.
Exactly, because that's what creates, like, whatever your idea of anything is your perception anyways. Right? So if I say, hey, this is a green bottle right here, but if I say this to a blind person, what does the word green even mean?
Yeah, it doesn't have any idea of it, right? And exactly. Well, is the dress blue or black, right? Is it gold or whatever the fuck that thing was, right, that went around?
Right. So that's basically your ability to perceive, you know, whatever it is, however you perceive it.
As before we wrap it up, we're kind of coming toward the end of the hour. I wanted to walk down with you, Soul, the energetics.
Okay.
Run me through it, man. Like, just kind of, we're sitting talking, energetics is this, it's kind of, because I'm going to do my own. I've already looked at a couple things, you know, a little bit, but just kind of, if I'm talking to you who's been there, who's, you know, walked down that line as a representative of it, you know, for me, as I walk down, you know, maybe just that, keep in mind this as you, or this is kind of what it is, or maybe for somebody that's never heard of it, of what that actually is.
So, I mean, energetics is basically your ability to your ability to create, man. Your you know, we talk about energy, but not even in a subjective manner. What, like, energy as far as what power source, right? You have power sources. We're all dependent on an external power source. If your power goes out and you don't have a generator, guess what?
Yeah.
You know, can you create your own energy?
You're a week in Hurricane Irma without power.
Exactly. Exactly. Me. And then we all panic, right? So I think what people, you know, for me, is realizing that, hey, you know, you have the power source. What do you call it? You have the ability and you have all the power to create that energy within yourself. So stop looking for an external savior. Stop looking for something outside of you to make some kind of change within your own life. You know, I think the only change that's going to come about is you creating that, you finding that power and you creating that from what you hold, right? No one else can have that control. No one else can drive that ship.